again, everybody. This is Steve Lacy. Welcome to my podcast, where I basically collect all the fascinating people I've met since I moved to New York and talk about their lives. And normally, you would think someone who's been on one of the most watched shows of all time, The People's Court, roaming the hallway, interviewing litigants, that in and of itself would be the most fascinating part of their life. But if your name is Kurt Chaplin, that is just one of many fascinating chapters that we get into in this episode of Binge Talking.
From New York City, USA, welcome to the Fox 5 Podcast Network.
All right, this is my podcast, Binge Talking. I've got another great guest. So far, I've been able to talk to some people from my life who are really interesting. This guy is definitely at the top of the list. I'm not sure if you've ever seen the viral video clip out of Australia where there's a spider in the middle of a kitchen floor, and these people, they sort of whack it with a broom, and the problem is the spider is pregnant, so then all of a sudden there's 10,000 spiders all over the floor. It's the ultimate nightmare scenario. That's what talking to Kurt Chaplin in real life is like. You ask the most innocuous question, and then you go 10 million different fascinating places. This guy's amazing.
Wow.
Kurt, welcome to my podcast.
Oh, nice to be here. Thanks a lot. I was wondering where you were going with that spider thing. It could have been worse, but it turned out
right.
Okay.
We brought it home at the end there. Okay. So first off, Kurt Chaplin, if the name sounds familiar, you're like, why does it sound familiar? You absolutely recognize him from roaming the hallways for the People's Court. You're now the voice of the show, but you don't do the hallway reporting anymore, but you appear in reruns.
I did it for 19 years.
Yes.
19 years. I was the guy interviewing the litigants after the cases. I'm also the guy, this is the plaintiff, this is the defendant. That's me. I've always been that, and I'm still the voice of the show.
Yeah.
I don't interview the litigants after the cases anymore, so you don't see me on camera anymore, except in reruns.
Right. I mean, that's a fascinating, iconic job. And what you just said, I didn't even realize that you're the voice of the people.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
This is the defendant. He is a real dirtbag. That's me.
And when I met you, so how I actually wound up meeting you was you live by the station, and there's a local coffee shop that has these amazing handcrafted baseballs that you, so they were on display, and I see these hand painted by Kurt Chaplin. I'm like, wait, that has to be that Kurt Chaplin.
Yeah.
So then I find you on Facebook. I send you a message, and we did a thing that we put on air of just you crafting the baseballs, which is really, tell people where to find that, just because I want them to see how insane these baseballs are.
If you have a chance, you can go to Kurt Chaplin's Painted Baseballs.
Mm-hmm.
And Chaplin is spelled like Charlie Chaplin.
Yeah.
L-I-N.
No relation, right?
No relation. So Kurt Chaplin's Painted Baseballs is on Instagram, and also on Facebook.
Yeah, these
but
things
go to
are
the Instagram page.
These things are really incredible. And the thing is, too, there's actually been an incredible evolution. Like, you can actually see each ball gets better than the previous
really?
One. So no, for sure. Like, I know every time I go to the coffee shop and there's a new one, I'm like, oh my god, this is so next level. The detail on these things is crazy. So you've been doing that now for like how
I've
many years?
Well, I've always been an artist, but I've been painting baseballs for 5-6 years now.
Yeah.
And as soon as I started, they started selling to collectors.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing.
Yeah.
You know, and then they started selling at higher and higher prices, like a baseball. You know, they're spending $900 to buy a baseball, which is, to me, it's a painting. My surface.
Totally. Yeah, yeah.
My surface is not a flat canvas. My surface is a spherical canvas.
Right.
But it's a painting.
No, which to me makes it 20 times more impressive because it's so hard. The level of detail you have, the tiniest little, finest little points. The really, you do have to check that out.
Yeah.
So we know you from the People's Court. We know you from. Now we're going to know you from the baseballs once people check that out. You and I did lunch the other day because we've been in touch, just, you know, hanging out. Yeah, we're buddies. We're neighborhood bros. And we were at the lunch counter, and you were talking about your softball league. And this is where the spider story, where everything leads to 500 different places. We were talking about your softball team, and I'm like, oh, like, what's the origin of the softball team? Like, you know, what's the thing that binds the people on the team together? And you're like, oh, I used to have a pirate radio station in 1993 that we took on Howard Stern in the morning, directed it. And I'm like, wait, what?
Yeah, it was big. It was big. Right.
So then we followed up. I'm like, you said, oh, I've got a documentary you should check out. I'm like, please bring it by the station. I'll watch. And I watched it. I watched it that night before the 10 o'clock news. It was a 50-minute documentary. We need to talk about Radio Free New York because this is fascinating as can be to me. So this was 1992.
92 into 93.
Yep.
And it was a big event in New York radio history.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of a seminal event It was a one-time thing, and it rocked the entire city. Turned radio upside down for that period of time that it was on the air, which was 9 months from roughly Columbus Day in October of 1992 until
July 23rd, 93.
Oh, is that what it was?
I'm fresh off the documentary.
July 23rd. And it was a cliffhanger the whole way, right?
So it's incredible. It's right. So like we start going down this road of you telling me the story. And so what happened was you make up a business plan. We're going to take on Howard Stern in the morning, 6 to 9, and you have to find the airtime. So you scan through the knobs and you're like, wait, this seems like a possible place.
Yeah. Well, the story actually, I would start a little bit earlier on the story.
Sure.
Because how did we get to that point of are we looking for this airtime to do this show?
Well, right.
My partner, Jimmy Buff, and myself, we were the co-hosts of Radio for New York. We came from, we were alumni of WNEW-FM, big rock station. Who remembers WNEW-FM 1027, WNEW-FM, where the Led Zeppelin got started and the Rolling Stones, everything got started.
New York rock station, which was
all
humongous,
alternative
right?
rock. You know, this was a station where they could play put on an album side and leave for 20 minutes and come back.
Sure.
You know, and everybody was doing whatever they were doing, listening to that album side.
Right. Talking at each other a lot.
That's
really
the kind
fast.
Of station it was. Progressive. You know, this was when FM first started. So that's NEW-FM.
Sure.
I found myself working at NEW-FM from 1986 to 1991. And I was on the morning show. I did the morning show there. With Dave Herman, the Dave Herman Rock and Roll Morning Show on 102.7 WNEW-FM.
You never forget that stuff, do you? Like, isn't it funny that the call letters and everything? Totally, right.
It was awesome.
Right. I do the 10 p.m. thing to anyone who.
You do it when you go home.
Right.
Just look in the mirror.
It's 10 p.m. now. It's 11:05. I'm on my couch now. Where's the remote?
Right. Okay, so I'm working there with these guys, and I was the sports guy. I was the crazy, outrageous sidekick sports guy. I was supposed to do, you know, two minutes every half hour or something like that. But my material was so out there and it was so crazy and it was like the best thing about the show. I wound up as the sidekick on the show with an open mic right next to Dave as we did the show every
morning.
Did
that cause tension? Was he like, oh God, this guy's like, he's taking
It
was cool. It was good. Okay.
He needed it. He needed a shot of energy.
There. Yep. Yeah.
He needed some.
You're always good for that.
Yeah, he needed that. He needed it. So there were a couple of us.
Yeah.
Anyway, so we do the show till 91. In 1991, that was when radio stations were getting bought and sold and bought and sold. We got fired. The morning show got fired in 1991.
Were you making like a ton of dough for that, or were you more famous? That like was it big money, or was it just sort of like a cool gig?
Dave was making big money.
Dave.
He was made. That was big money in radio.
Sure.
The sidekick wasn't making big money.
Gotcha.
But I was getting my kids through school, and it was a great gig.
Yeah.
So we wound up being let go, even though we were. Had tremendous ratings in the morning. It was an ownership thing and a cutting of. You're right. It was a cutting of
salary.
And expenses.
Sure.
To sell the station again.
Oh, you know, gotcha. Yeah. Get the books in order. Right.
That's what all those those people do. Buy companies, cut the expenses. You know, cut the bottom line, then resell it.
Flip it. Right.
Yeah. Flip it. So that was the deal. Prior to that, my radio career had taken me through a stint with Howard Cosell.
Right.
Very important. Because what I learned from working with Howard Cosell in the early 80s, he was the greatest radio broadcaster I ever met.
Mm-hmm.
Howard Stern is a close second or first.
Sure.
Also.
You could go either way
close
on
first.
That one. Yeah, for you. Yeah.
Howard Stern's amazing. Mm-hmm. And right there also is Imus.
Okay.
These are the greatest radio personalities I ever worked with. And I had worked with all of these guys before... getting to NEW-FM. That's
right.
How
I mean,
got
that's like
there.
The Mount Rushmore of radio for sure.
Exactly.
Yeah.
These are the guys that I learned from, which is why I wound up on NEW-FM as the crazy morning show guy and, you know, creating this excitement in the whole city, roughly about sports, but I totally expanded the whole thing.
Yeah.
We get fired in 91. And I'm a dangerous broadcaster. Very, very dangerous broadcaster. I know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
I begged them not to fire us. I said, you're crazy to do this.
Right.
We're what you build around, especially me. But they said,
yeah.
Got to do it.
Yeah.
So fine. We were gone. So the guy who ran the board, the board op on that show, Jimmy Buff, and I said, you know, we got to go. We got to do something. This corporate radio situation in New York City is is abominable.
Mm-hmm.
And it still exists today.
Yeah.
Same thing. It's the same thing.
Meaning just like the same four classic rock songs over and over, no risk taking.
Yeah. Tightly controlled playlist.
Sure.
Everything has to be tested first. Oh, no, we can't play the song because of we haven't taken it to the audience yet,
yeah.
You know, to
yeah.
the room in there where they listen to whatever it is, and all these consultants for consultants, and it was a mess. And the result was the radio sucked.
Yeah. It didn't matter what you were listening to. They're all the same across the country, basically.
It sucked.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And here I am.
You've referenced kids, by the way. So you've got a wife, your lovely wife.
Yeah.
You've got kids. You have real responsibilities. It's
yeah.
not like you're 25 and
I
can just
kids.
Not think about whatever you're doing and plunge into it.
Two kids.
So you decide to start your own radio station.
Buff and I said, we got to do something about radio here.
Mm-hmm.
Let's do our own show. Let's find somewhere to do it. Now we're
yeah.
I'm to where you started. They're finding somewhere to do this
yeah.
show. And let's get friends and family. Let's write a business plan up. What we're going to do, how we're going to do it exactly. Radio Free New York was the name of it.
Yeah.
It had a well thought out, well executed game plan for format,
mm-hmm.
for building the business, for building the advertising revenues. And we were going to go out there and be the most exciting show on the air.
Yeah.
In the mornings. Morning drive time only.
Yeah.
Not weekends, not overnights, not afternoons. Morning drive time.
Yep.
And we were going to rock the out of the city.
Uh-huh. And so in
it
the
is
documentary.
A podcast, I could probably say it.
Right. You do it, though. So you find and there's what? It was a Chinese language radio station where basically the owner would rent out chunks of
yes.
time.
That's what we found. We looked
yeah.
up and down the dial
yeah.
all over the place. We went to our friends and family, showed them the business plan.
Yeah.
Said, you want to invest in Chaplin and Buff? This is your chance. And friends and family did. And
yeah.
a few investors did. We collected $80,000.
Mm-hmm.
Then we looked for our spot on the dial. Where are we going to do this? There was nowhere to do it.
Right.
There's nowhere. You can't just go on the radio, really? Where? So we found this frequency, 105.9, had a pretty good signal in Manhattan.
Yeah.
And the guy was speaking a foreign language,
mm-hmm.
Chinese. Then the next guy spoke Swahili. And then somebody from Albania would give the news in
yeah.
Albanian.
Yeah.
And it was like a Tower of Babel.
Mm-hmm.
We found the Tower of Babel at 105.9.
Uh-huh.
It exists. It's real. It's
yeah,
real.
Yeah.
That story is real. It was right there. And so they were leasing airtime.
Yep.
So they were not really a broadcast outlet. They were more like a landlord renting space, retail space,
yeah.
15 minutes at a time.
Yeah, yeah.
That's how they made their money.
Yep.
They didn't make their money.
They weren't invested in the product per se. They just wanted people in there.
Well, they weren't programming and selling
yeah.
ads
yeah.
and making money on the ads. They were making money from the individual producers who would lease 15 minutes, pay the station their money, and then the station didn't care what the producer did.
Yeah,
with
yeah.
It. They made their money on the leasing.
Gotcha.
Of the time.
So you're paying out. So now it comes out to you have to pay 10 grand a week.
Well, they were leasing it 15 minutes at a time to these people because that's all anyone could afford.
Okay.
And nobody had any big ideas for the station.
Yeah.
You know, one guy was selling pills to, you know, grow hair. And then the next guy is reading your palm on the radio.
Right.
And all these crazy wackos were on there doing this nonsense.
Yeah.
So we Buff and I,
yep.
Went in there and proposed to the owner of the station, a Chinese guy named
yeah.
Arthur Liu. We said, we will lease 6 a.m. to 9 a.m., 3 hours every morning, Monday to Friday,
mm-hmm.
in one shot.
Right.
You're sold out. Congratulations.
Yep.
You're sold out in the mornings. And we agreed on a price of, he said, okay, we agreed on a price of $10,000
a week. Yeah.
For those 15 hours.
Yeah.
So that's 3 hours a day, 5 days a week, 15
yeah.
hours, $10,000 a week. I don't know. Does that come out to like
$7.50 an hour or something?
Yeah,
right,
that's what
right?
we started
yeah.
at. $7.50
yeah.
an hour. Oh, there and then they immediately started trying to jack it up on us, which is why the drama began between us and them at the radio station.
Right.
At least we made the deal.
Which is like the most New York story, like the rent go, you know, you start a restaurant, it becomes popular, and then they jack
yeah.
the rent and you can never get ahead because if you don't own the thing ultimately
yeah
the end
you
day,
get kicked
you're
out
at the mercy of everybody. Right.
Well, we didn't allow them to kick us out without a fight,
right?
And we made that fight part of our format.
Mm-hmm.
And it was such a cliffhanger. It was like binge watching or binge talking, you know. You
plug.
You know, you get to the end of an episode, and it's a cliffhanger, and you have to watch the next episode. So you had to come back the next day to see if we were going to still be on the air.
Right, so it was 92, and your whole thing was, and this, like, I grew up on this sort of radio format that I can't even believe you were pushing for good music. So I'm just used to the radio being, you know, the same songs I've heard my entire life. Radio has never changed
over
once.
And over.
Totally.
You play the Rolling
Stones. Hotel California, right. Start me up.
If you do that, I'm going to shoot myself on the air if I hear that song one more time.
So you're into breaking music. It's that time period we were talking, the end of my high school, beginning of college. So it was Blind Melon, Blues Traveler, sort of, you know, stuff like that.
Bare Naked Ladies.
Right.
Screaming in the Trees.
You had them in studio. You do concerts.
They were one of our big bands. Tragically Hip bands from California.
Yeah.
I can name dozens and dozens and dozens of cool bands, some of whom went on Wallflowers, very big.
Sure,
you know, Jacob Dylan.
Yeah.
Some became huge.
Yeah.
Some made it, some didn't. Some were garage bands. Some were bands that were just bringing us their tapes.
Yep.
If I didn't like the tape, I didn't play it. If I liked it, you're on the air.
Right.
I'll play you.
And then the other part of your business plan was that you were going to go directly at Howard, who was the king of the morning.
Well, listen, playing good music is one thing.
Yeah.
That's okay. That's great. That's a great element of a format, but that's not good enough.
Right.
That's not good enough in New York City to... You have to broadcast your ass off.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be really good.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, every second
has
to be well thought out and productive.
Yeah.
I'm talking about between records, what you say. If you say one thing, if you say two things, whatever it is you say has to be part of this format. But you don't sound like a robot. You sound like it's all happening off the cuff because you're a really good broadcaster.
Yeah.
Sounds like it's all happening right there.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
So great new music, breaking great new music was part of our format. That was the big thing.
Sure.
Now, in order to facilitate that, this
was even before CD players in your car, really, and you certainly didn't have the internet.
Right.
You didn't have iPod.
No internet.
So, like, you really needed radio to get new music, especially if you were in commute somehow or another.
Yeah.
Or the radio was your lifeline. That was
That's the only place you could hear it.
Yeah.
You had to tune in the morning.
Yeah.
You still had to tune in radio in the morning to hear music.
Right.
Right? And so I only had 80,000.
Well, you had 2 months burn rate, basically.
That's it. And it's 10,000 a week.
Yeah.
I had 2 months of rent, basically. Airtime rent.
Right.
But I had a one-year lease with the radio station where I was committed for $500,000.
Jeez.
A little bit of hair fell out. A little bit of hair. I had to take one of my kids out of school and put her into a public school. They were both going to private schools. Yeah, I took one out.
Whoa.
I started, you know, the pressure was on.
Yeah.
The financial. I'm not a rich guy.
What were your hours, too? I mean, are you like, you're thinking about it all day. You're trying to sell ads at night. You're going to concerts. You're promoting the brand through openly. Right. I mean, you were just
you're
working around the clock.
Introducing bands on stage down in the Village.
Yep.
You know, at the Bottom Line.
Yeah.
And at CBGB. You're introducing these bands that you're playing on the air. They want the Radio Free New York guys to come down and bring them on stage.
Sure, yeah.
Because we're promoting their shows on the air, and then we're there emceeing their shows. So that takes you till 1, 2 in the morning. Then the show's on at 6. So you get home, you get a couple hours of sleep, you're up at 4.
Yeah.
You're listening to new music. You have to listen to new music every second of the day to find the new stuff that we're going to play today. Because the show starts, and I go, I just heard something this morning. Buff, you won't believe this. You ready? Just play it. Just play it. Don't worry about it. Here we go.
Yeah.
This is Radio Free New York. Play.
Wow.
And then a song will come on, and hopefully the people are going like, holy shit, is that good?
Right.
Oh, my God, I've never heard anything. Wow, what is this? And we play another song and another one. Now, the music's great, but where's the money coming from after 2 months? Good question.
Right.
Really good question.
Not to sound like your wife that entire time, but where's the money coming from after two months?
Man. It was, we had 2 months. Buff said, we're going to jump off the cliff and grow wings on the way down. I never forgot that one. Is that a famous saying, or did he make
usually
that
it goes the other way. You go too close to the sun, and then
they
burn off, and you hit the ground.
No, he said, listen, that's our only choice. We have to jump, and hopefully we'll grow wings on the way down.
Yeah.
And so we jumped. We jumped off, you know, that first day and said, this is Radio Free New York. We have no listeners because nobody knows we were coming.
Right.
No one knew we were coming. There was no promotional budget.
Mm-hmm.
There was no radio station to talk
people
about.
People just had to stumble upon it scanning at through first, and be like, what's this?
At first, that's the only way you could discover it. So I went on the air, and I went like, is anybody listening? This is Radio Free New York. We're on the radio. We're here, and we're going to stay here. And so we just started like that. And I said, if you are listening, and if you do discover us, you have to tell five friends. It was tell five friends was one of our big things. A pyramid, you know, build a pyramid.
Viral from the Twitter bottom and everything, right? Like this is the original viral marketing and whatnot.
Yeah, person to person Twittering.
Yeah.
Tell five friends. Yep. Because if you want us back on the air tomorrow, that's what you have to do. Otherwise, you might tune in tomorrow and we might not be here because we didn't get the support or didn't raise the money, didn't get our ad revenues up in time. We have to do this. You're part of the show.
Right.
And you're part of the format. So it became a compelling thing for every listener to like go out and say, hey, did you hear about Radio Free New York? And I don't know if they're going to be on tomorrow. Have you heard it? You got to listen to this thing on 105.9. Right. I'm telling you on the air every day. Don't just sit there and listen. If you do, I'm glad you're entertained, but we're going to go off the air.
You know what that reminds me of? In the Chris Matthews book, Hardball, one of his like tips is let somebody do you a favor because then they're invested in you forever. And that's sort of what you're doing. You're allowing them to be a part of the thing, and then they want you to succeed because they helped. You know, I spread the word. You guys got to listen to this.
Well, Chris Matthews, that sounds manipulative the way he's saying it. Let someone do you a favor, then you got them. Well, I wasn't really being manipulative. I was begging for support.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
It was really straightforward.
Yeah.
We really did need them.
Yeah.
That wasn't in the business plan where we'll get this audience to back us up and do all our promoting for us. That was growing wings on the way down.
Yeah,
that was an example of it.
Yeah.
You know, because we went on and we realized right away. So our business plan was brand new breaking new music right out of the wrapper. Because our listeners were raised on NEWFM and all these great early FM stations where that happened.
Yeah.
And they're cool enough to hear really cool music in the morning. Forget what these idiotic consultants and people are telling. Oh, no, you can't play new stuff.
Yeah.
You got to play Start Me Up Again because they're used to it. And oh, no, those guys are ruining radio.
Right.
This is me talking on Radio Free New York,
really.
This is what I would say.
Right, right.
And I would say to the listener, no, you hear me, right? I know you're cool enough. I know you may be above a certain age. You may be over 30, even over 40, 45, whatever you are. You're cool enough to hear this song, Buff.
Right. Yeah.
And we'd play it.
Yeah.
And of course, they'd all go, wow, great stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And with the bands, these were the bands that we were mentioning before.
Yeah.
We were playing. Okay, so the music part was cool.
Yeah.
And the begging the audience to get involved created this groundswell and an involvement with our audience that they were part of it with us.
Right.
You know, if we go off the air, they go off the air.
Yeah.
You know, if we go off, they lose.
Yeah.
Us. You know, save us. Throw us, you know. We're throwing ourselves at your mercy.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we're saying.
Yeah.
That's a good format.
Right.
That's a way to communicate.
I feel like the whole thing predated the internet, but it's the same sort of thing that eventually brought a lot of people into fame once social media existed. It's the same, you know?
Right.
So the ground up.
Right.
You know?
It's so much better than someone getting on the air, let's say on a morning show, one of these other like wacky morning shows where they have a bunch of people and they're going, you know, I don't use sunscreen. I was at the beach on Thursday, and I got a suntan on my. Look at my shins. My shins are all sunburned. Everybody's
right. The fake laughing and all that.
And all that.
That format became so prevalent so fast everywhere. Like you couldn't tell.
Well,
one stage
my
from
point about that format is: you're a listener. You're listening to what I just did. Are you involved in that?
Right.
Or do you have any place there at all with these idiots talking about themselves and thinking they're funny and laughing at their stupid nonsense crap? That's you're sitting there listening like going like, what am I doing here?
Right.
You know, no, why don't I go somewhere else? I'm not included.
Yeah.
I'm not part.
So the other part of the business plan, though, is that you decide to go right at Howard.
Well, I only had 2 months worth of money.
Yeah.
And I went on the air without an ad. So I would play. I would do ads just to make it sound like radio, you know, for free.
Okay.
I would do free ads for Cadillac. And I would tell the audience, I'm not getting paid for this, but, you know, just got to sound like a little bit like radio.
Uh-huh.
This is how we want it to sound.
Right.
You know, when we get it going, we're just looking for our first advertiser. And the first advertiser finally came along. We would go out. We didn't have a ad an advertising executive manager.
Sure.
It was us.
Yeah.
So part of our day was after the show.
Oh my God.
Going to the ad agencies and begging them to give us a little bit of that American Express buy, that's radio buy, that's in New York. You're putting some on Wins, and you're putting some on this station, and money's going here and there. Give us a tiny little piece of that, and it'll be worth it. We're begging. And nobody knew what Radio Free New York was.
Yeah.
What we were. So finally, some of the ad people are listening to our show. We got our first ad, you know? And that ad, which I think I probably charged $15 for the thing.
Yeah, yeah.
I had to get this ad revenue up to 150, 175, 200 a minute in 2 months, from zero to 200 a minute in 2 months in order to survive past 2 months before my money ran out. NEW was charging 200 a minute. Howard was charging, you know, 200 or 300 a minute or whatever. I had to get up into that neighborhood in 2 months on a show that nobody had ever heard of, on a station no one ever heard of, where it's Chinese and Swahili up until I go on at 6 o'clock, and when I go on off with Radio Free New York at 9 o'clock, it goes back to Chinese.
Right.
For the rest of the 21 hours. So people had to come to my show from other places, leave where they were at 5:59.
Right.
Come to Radio Free New York, join us at 6 to 9, and then at 9 o'clock leave and go back somewhere else. That is unheard of in radio.
Right.
What you want in radio is a continuum. You want a lead-in show that delivers you a big audience, and then you keep it and build on it.
You hand it off.
You build your audience because you have a consistent
format. And you
promote
it around the clock all day, tomorrow on the morning show.
A consistent 24-hour format. Yeah. We broke every rule of radio, which is the way I like to do things.
Yeah. So, I mean, and then so as it gets bigger, you do get advertisers as it gets going.
They started to come on. That first one for $15 an hour was Rothman's Men's Clothing.
I knew you would know what it was, right? You never forget that.
Rothman's.
Right? Yeah.
And I never raised their price. They were $15 till forever.
Right, on principle.
When everyone else was paying $200 and $250 at the very, very end, when we were getting up there and trying to make this thing really happen, they stayed at $15.
So then eventually you make this deal with your audience. You're like, listen, we know you're listening to Howard. We've got it in our ear too. And he would do those long breaks, so he could do like 45 minutes straight.
The people listening to this podcast right now who think they know the story or are hearing a really cool story about, have no idea how dramatic and intense this story is about to get. So there's no way anybody who's listened to the first 10 or 12 minutes, whatever it is, how long we've been talking, can possibly not listen to the rest of this podcast. Because we are going to blow their doors off with the rest of this story. They are going to be...
I agree, because this is what blew my doors off at the lunch counter.
Right. I mean, if you think what you've heard so far is interesting, and it is.
It is, right.
Because we took on corporate radio, and we were just two guys up against these giant corporations. Amazing.
Yeah.
And growing. What happens from this point to the end of the Radio Free New York story is absolutely mind-blowingly intense.
Right. Let's do it.
And dramatic.
Yeah.
I just needed to get myself ready to tell this part. it's amazing. I can't believe I did it.
And this is the part that I was telling you about, like his softball team. Now we're in the whole thing. And then this is the part that he told me. And like my mind went into overdrive.
Yeah. We were having lunch and I have a softball team called Radio Free New York.
Yeah.
It's now 2017. It's... How many years later?
24 years later.
24 years later, I still have a team.
Yeah.
A brand name.
Okay, this fall, we're coming up on the 25th anniversary of it.
Maybe I'll have a reunion.
Yeah.
This is
well timed, actually. That's good.
I have to do a reunion because the characters are still around who were part of this story.
Right.
The crazy characters who helped us out.
All right. So now let's go the challenging Howard thing. Like,
let's go back to the business plan. In the business plan, how am I going to build an audience on a nothing radio station? It's like being in a dinghy in the Pacific Ocean with two guys in a dinghy, and they're racing, you know,
a Somalian pirate.
We're pirate radio.
This is my radio station now.
You heard how we opened the show, right? With the helicopters.
Yeah,
in.
It was very War of the Worlds, and it really it drew you in. Yeah.
Yeah, it was like war. It was like that.
Mm-hmm.
And the show opened up with the helicopters. You hear boots hit the ground like there's an invasion of soldiers taking place, banging on the door, glass breaking, like we're breaking into the studio.
Right.
And literally taking over this studio to do Radio Free New York for the next 3 hours.
Yeah.
And during the 3 hours, you'd hear banging on the doors like people were trying to get us off, you know, that get us off
right,
the air and
right.
break back in so they can take back. That was all part of the
yeah.
format.
No, it's very powerful.
Okay, but now to the intense part.
Yeah.
Right? Okay. Buff and I, in our original business plan, said we are going to attack corporate radio as often as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And our other target was a gentleman by the name of Howard Stern. Ever hear of him?
Mm-hmm.
Have you heard of him? Yeah, he became pretty big. He was huge. Howard was. Now, again, I told you I worked with Cosell,
yeah,
Imus, and Howard along the way in my career
yeah.
prior to this mm-hmm. moment. I'd worked with Howard when he first came to New York in and to WNBC 66.
Oh, wow.
He was brand new.
Yeah.
He was wet behind
oh,
the
ears.
Oh,
were you with Imus when he came there?
I was
that
with
whole
Imus,
thing.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
I was working with Imus, flying in the helicopter, doing the traffic reports.
Oh, wow, okay.
Yeah, you know, I was in the helicopter, and I was really down in the airport. I never even really went
Is
up
that true?
In the helicopter. Yeah, because I hated the helicopter, and I had no insurance policy.
Oh,
so
wow.
I would tell Heinz.
Wait, helicopters go down. Like, I'm not really into flying in a helicopter, yeah.
Heinz, I said, do not take, start the thing, you know, the
yeah.
rotor. Get that going so I can sound like I'm in the air. And then Imus or Howard would throw it to me, and I'd go like, yeah. And they go, yeah, Howard, yeah, I'm up here hovering over the FDR Drive. It's crowded. It's 4:30. What do you think? Of course, there's nobody's mo-. You know, there's no
oh
point in doing
God.
A track. What do you need?
Like, yeah, right.
Why do a traffic report?
Right. Same thing every day. Like, you
it's
know,
the same thing
yeah,
every day.
Yeah, yeah.
Everything's jammed
yeah,
up. Now back
up,
to you.
Back to you. Right, right,
yeah,
right.
right.
Yeah, yeah.
But I did it on the ground in the airport.
That's,
out in Westchester
see,
somewhere.
Again, like, that's an aside, but like, I could do a whole
oh,
podcast about that.
Wait a minute. Wait till I tell you how I covered the Thanksgiving Day parade back in those days.
Oh, my God.
That's even worse. It sounded great on the air, though.
Yeah.
But listen, like I said.
Yeah.
I learned my radio from Cosell, from Imus, from Howard, from the greatest carnival barkers in the business.
Yeah.
You know? Not con men. I don't want to say con men because I don't want to get compared to anybody who fits that.
Right.
Might fit that description right now in our political scene or anything. Wasn't a con man, but I was a broadcaster who could paint a picture, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And to make the, just make the listener.
So you're on listen. This puts you on a collision course. With,
I'm ready for Howard.
Right,
because
right.
I learned from Howard.
Yeah, right.
I know what he does as well as he did it. I know, because I sat right next to him
yeah,
as he was doing it.
Yeah.
So when we went on the air as David versus Goliath in New York City with the odds stacked against us, I needed to get Howard, I needed to get his attention, get him mad, get him talking about us on his gigantic show with the biggest audience in radio.
Right.
I targeted him in order to bait him into a fight with me, into being mad at me, into being going after me.
Right.
The more he went after me, the better.
Right.
It was in my business plan.
Right.
Stupid Howard. It was a piece of cake.
Yeah.
He thought he was a big, tough guy, and I was using him as, you know.
Right.
Like he does to other people.
Mm-hmm.
No one else in broadcasting was able to deal with Howard and win against him on the radio anywhere. We talked about how he went into Philadelphia one time, and he would go into a new market as he was expanding his show, and he would go right after the number one guy. In Philadelphia, it was a guy named DiBella. And DiBella was number one in Philly, but now Howard's on in Philly.
Mm-hmm.
And so DiBella doesn't know what's coming. Believe me, he had no idea what was coming. And Howard barrels into town, goes right after DiBella, knocks the crap out of him, knocks his show right out of the number one spot, completely takes over the town, like he did in every town.
Right, right.
And that led to some really, really terrible personal problems for DiBella that came into play during a confrontation personally between face-to-face between Howard and I on the radio a little bit later on.
Right.
Okay. So I did the same thing. You know, I watched him do this in market after market. When I came in as the little guy, I went right after him.
Mm-hmm.
And he was so stupid that he took the bait completely and started talking about, that guy Kirk Chaplin, I know, I worked with him. He begged me for a job, and he's this. All he's doing is trying to promote his new little radio show. Well, duh. Yeah, you idiot. That's exactly what I'm doing. And, you know, and I'm going to keep doing it, and you keep talking about me, and that's great.
Yeah.
Every time he talked about me, we played that on our air. So now we have Howard on our air for his listeners to get more of Howard. You want more of Howard?
Right,
we have
it. Right.
We have Howard talking
you,
about
it. You got
us.
Him to punch down, basically, which you're never supposed to do.
Punch
you're,
down. Right, very good.
Yeah.
Very good.
Yeah.
And we had a Howard impersonator who did a fantastic job. Mm-hmm. I think his name was Eli Gold. He would call in. Oh, this was great. I forgot to tell
you
this.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Okay, so our deal was we counter-programmed against Howard's show. His Achilles heel was what I went right after.
Mm-hmm.
What was Howard's Achilles heel? He had a big Achilles heel. I knew exactly what it was,
yep.
And I went right for it, mm-hmm. And he hated it.
Right.
What was it?
The never-ending commercial breaks.
Bingo.
Right.
Exactly.
Right.
And everyone talked about it. Oh, I love Howard. I love it, but his commercial breaks are so long. It's 12 minutes.
Right, and for him, so in order to get the 40 minutes untouched, he would have to, on the flip side, have long breaks.
Yeah.
That's how he was able to do his thing.
Well, I think he did two or three 10 to 12 minute commercial breaks,
right.
An hour. He had
right.
So many commercials.
Right. But that's what gave him the breathing room to not just be every 5 minutes commercial.
Yeah, that's right. Right. So, that's right.
But you're right, that creates an
he
opening
did it like
for somebody
that.
Else. Right.
Okay, so that... Everyone in New York was talking about his long commercial breaks. Well, when I went on, immediately I started talking right to Howard's audience. Hey, I know you love Howard. This is me on radio for New York. I know you love. I love Howard. He's the best. Howard's the best. Okay, no doubt about that. I'm not trying to tell you he's not.
Yeah.
Who do you think I'm listening to in my earpiece while I'm doing radio? I'm listening to Howard.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but when Howard goes to commercial, he's not the best. It's just 12 minutes of commercials. We're the best when he goes to commercial. So I'll tell you what. just for Howard's audience, when Howard goes to commercial, you come over here to Radio Free New York. We'll stop what we're doing right there when he goes to break, and we'll play, just for the Howard Stern audience, three brand new breaking bands with incredible music, and then send you back to Howard's show when he comes back on there. And you will hear three fantastic songs while he's doing commercials.
Right.
How's that sound, guys? Tell your friends about that.
I'm realizing all this. Like, you were basically the DVR. You could fast forward through commercials with you guys back then.
That's
you would
right.
never have to deal with his commercials.
Not miss
right.
any programming.
Right.
Okay, so I would do that. But I promise them, when Howard comes back on, I'm not going to try to steal you.
Yeah, yeah,
I
yeah.
promise I'll tell you. Yeah. Howard's back. Go. See you later.
Yep.
Howard's back.
Yeah.
Go on. Go.
Mm-hmm.
But in the Arbitrons, if you can borrow audience like that, for that period of time, for 10 yeah. minutes, an hour, you get credit for that audience. So our Arbitrons started to spike up in the book very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And I had 2 months, right?
Right.
So we went on with zero in the ratings. Zero.
Right.
And the first person who heard us, I said, tell five people. Maybe we had five then. And it went from there. And then the first Howard listeners started to hear about us. And we put up posters all over New York City.
Yeah.
Posters everywhere. You know how they plaster the construction sites with posters,
yeah, yeah,
you know?
Yeah, right.
We had Radio Free New York posters there.
Yeah.
That was my big expense. That was my advertising expense.
Right, because it's expensive
that
to
was
print
my
that
one.
All up. Yeah.
It was like $5,000 a shot to plaster
wow.
a neighborhood.
Yeah.
But we had to do that. We had no real other option. And it was very effective because I could put whatever I wanted on those posters.
Oh,
and
right,
I would
right.
say... Howard, blah, I put a picture of blah, 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 Howard, we're sick of it. We're sick of it, too. Come to Radio Free New York during his commercial break. I got my message out
yeah.
there to people who might not have known about 105.9. And all I needed to do was get you to tune in once, and I have you.
Right, right.
Right. And then tell five friends, and the whole thing went from there. But when Howard got wind of me counter-programming during his commercial
oh, yeah.
breaks... The fun was over for him. I mean, the any sense of humor he had about what I was doing,
yeah, yeah.
he got effing mad because he knew the most dangerous broadcaster he ever came up against was sitting right up the dial from him, looking him right in the eye, and had him right in my crosshairs. And he knew what the cost could have been
right.
to him.
Yeah,
no one else was ever smart enough to do that. Or no one had the freedom to do that or whatever.
Right, that's probably it, right. You bought the freedom to do that.
Well, we kind of invented the format that way.
Yeah.
This is what people should be doing on the radio.
Mm-hmm.
You know? This is what you should be doing right now.
Right.
I should be doing radio for you. I could be doing it right now. I'd do the same thing against whoever the number one show is.
Yeah.
I could do it against Wins.
Right.
On all news station, I could do it against.
Yep.
I could go on the air. Okay, here you go. If you're a radio programmer and listening to this,
yep.
Here you go. This is called Come and Get It. This is a contest that will make you number one in 4 weeks.
Right.
Should I give it up? I'll give it up. All right. Listen to Wins for 1 minute at the top of the hour.
Mm-hmm.
Then come to Radio Free New York and win $10,000. Listen to Wins for 1 minute.
Yep.
Or listen to Howard for 1 minute at the top of the hour. Then keep checking with us. When I say, okay, we're ready to play Come and Get It, you call, and I'm going to ask a question about something Wins did in that first 1 minute. Something someone said, what was the lead story, what did Howard say about so-and-so in that first minute?
Yep.
And I play my contest at 25 minutes after the hour. So you keep you know what Howard said in that first minute.
Right.
So you have what it takes to win $25,000 now on Radio Free New York on Come and Get It.
Yeah.
Either Wins against, you could do it against Wins, you can do it against Z100's morning show. Whoever number one is,
sure.
I'm after you.
Yeah.
And you know what? I'm going to get you because I'm going to play Come and Get It. And I never played Come and Get It on Radio Free New York. I never got to that.
Right.
Oh, I was about, I had a bullet in my.
You didn't have the money to pull that off.
I didn't have the money. Right. I didn't have the time.
So let's get to the press conference, which is like the craziest part of this. Or one of them. I mean, there's a lot. But this press conference like gives me chills to hear about what you pulled off.
Yeah. This was a direct nose-to-nose, eye-to-eye public confrontation between me and Howard Stern, which I initiated.
You pulled like what Benji or Stuttering John would do.
Yeah.
Senator Wiener, Senator Wiener. Exactly. You did that to Howard.
Exactly. Right to him.
Yeah.
He's the target. He's not pulling it off against others and sitting back.
Yeah.
He's the target, and he should be the target.
So this is some sort of big press conference at a hotel launching something or other.
Well, our show had started to take off, you know, and we were a big buzz. We were getting more press in the Daily News and the Post. And Newsday on Long Island and everywhere, we were getting more press than he was. They were writing about the two pirates on Radio Free New York that are playing this band, all these great bands, and everyone's talking about Radio Free New York now in the city. Every day in the media section was a story and a picture of me and Buff, and usually a little headshot of Howard Stern in the lower part because he was part of our format, and I loved seeing him in our stories.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So it was working. And we were kicking his ass all over the place. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not going to say, you know, he was worried about it. He's Howard Stern. He's making billions of dollars a year. He's not really worried about us.
Yeah.
But we were.
But psychologically, that gets to him.
We were slapping him around, and he couldn't do anything about it.
Right.
He was helpless because I would go on the air and say, Howard, I'm not afraid of you. I'm not. I know what you're made of.
Yeah.
I know how you do what you do. You don't scare me. And you know what? I'll be right back in your face tomorrow. So watch out for me.
Yeah.
In the meantime, for your audience, listen to this.
Yeah.
Listen to this song for you guys. Okay. So he was he was the king of all media, so-called.
Yeah.
Self-anointed. He wasn't the king of all media. His book stunk. He did write one. His movie was bad. He got a movie out there.
You didn't like Private Parts?
I only saw it once.
Oh, come on.
He didn't mention me in it, so I'm mad at him.
You know? Oh, there we go. Now we're getting somewhere.
Well, no,
I knew it.
I lived at NBC with him.
Yeah.
It was all about NBC and Pig Virus and his days there. And
that's incredible that
I didn't care.
You were there for that.
I
get it.
I don't need his movie for that. I was there.
It's harder to embrace the success of like a contemporary of yours or whatever. I get that too. You know what I mean? Like,
I am nothing against him.
Yeah.
I don't begrudge him his success.
Yeah.
He's the most talented. He's one of him and Cosell.
Yeah.
He's one of the greatest ever.
Yeah.
Right. Howard's the best.
So bring us.
Right, how we doing?
Boy, this is going so long because it's like so. Yeah, we're at 40 minutes. So we're getting towards the end just because.
All right.
But we could talk for hours.
All right.
Is the genius of why I brought this guy in here. We're at this press conference. He's up on the dais and he's taking questions from the media.
It's his e-show. They're introducing Howard Stern is going to host an e-show and he's great. Who's a better interviewer than Howard? Maybe you, but not too many people are better interviewer than Howard.
Oh, yeah.
Right? So. Big press conference at the Plaza Hotel. Howard Stern's got his deal. on TV. He's got a show on E. Do you remember his show?
No, I love the E show. Yeah,
right,
yeah,
it was
yeah,
great.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is the introduction of it. Everybody is there. A huge dais full of executives. Obviously, the E executives.
Yeah.
His agent, Don Buchwald, all his henchmen. And in the audience, every media reporter in the tri-state area is there. It's packed.
Sure.
So this was the place for me to show up and make it happen. In real time, live, in front of a packed room, I'm going to pick a fight with Howard Stern right there in front of everybody. He doesn't know about it. We snuck in along the wall, you know, and the music and was going on, the drum. And we snuck in a to the door, and we snuck inside the door. Now we're inside the room. Now the press, we're in the room, in the banquet room, in the where it's taking place in the plaza. There's Howard. There he is. Now I'm in the same room with Howard, and I got him in my sights. And there's an open mic in the middle of the room. There's a mic where questions are taken. So you can walk up to the mic. When they take questions, I see the mic. I see the whole deal. Mm-hmm. I see what's going to happen. So he does his thing in his presentation. Everyone's applauding. It's a big Howard Stern day. Oh, God. It was his greatest day of his life, you know? Except for one thing. There was a torpedo pointed right at him. Okay, now we're going to open up for questions from the media. So-and-so and someone from some magazine. Howard, you know, do you wear boxers or briefs? And they ask a stupid question. Howard, who's your favorite person to interview? And all this stupid, you know, who cares, crap, you know? And they're all sucking up to Howard. Everyone's sucking up to Howard. And then so I got online for the questions. I'm third. I'm second. Now I'm right behind the person. I'm next.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone's laughing, having a great old time.
Right, right.
And now it's okay, next. And I had my hood pulled over. And so I get up to the microphone, and I stand up straight, and I look Howard straight in the eye, and he knows who it is. And I say,
in light of your defeat and humiliation of John DiBella and the recent tragic death of his wife, would you care to reconsider or re-examine your exploitation and abuse of people on the radio?
That's the wife of that Philadelphia number one disc jockey that he knocked off the podium and destroyed his life, destroyed his marriage, and got his wife to play dial-a-date with Howard on his show. Then she committed suicide afterward. And this was his format. This was his format.
Yeah.
Humiliating.
I mean,
people.
Are you freaking out as you're delivering this? I mean, are you like,
I was,
you know, like
freaking out?
Yeah,
yes, I was but you couldn't tell from looking at me.
Right, right, right.
I
no, kept no, but
my
inside,
voice.
Right, right.
I kept. Now, he hears that, he went crazy. And he starts yelling and he starts screaming. This is where it got intense.
No, I'm right here. What do you mean? That's why I showed up.
Because he stands up and he's on a raised platform.
Oh, right, right, right.
And he's looking down.
Yeah.
It's like you're looking at God, you know, and you're facing him.
Right.
And there's fire coming off of him and sparks.
Yeah.
And everybody's turning, focused on you like, who is this guy?
That's not true. You're exploiting me right now. You're showing these people what I'm talking about. So would you care to re-examine your position of exploitation and abuse?
When the moment finally ended, and I said, okay, Howard, thank you very much. And I left the microphone, and I finally breathed for the first time in 2-3 minutes, you know. And I caught my breath. I'm sure somebody else asked a question. Then the big thing, the big moment happens. A reporter from Channel 4 in New York in the, raises his hand, identifies himself.
Howard, Tim Armstrong from Channel 4 News. Could you just give us your reaction?
Channel 4 News in New York?
That's right here. Could you just give us your reaction to Annette DiBella's death?
When he did that, I said, yes! Yes, man, because it's legit what I'm doing to this guy.
Yeah.
It is not just an attempt to promote my radio show, but it is. But what I asked him was a legitimate journalistic question from a legit press corps, and it got followed up on in that press conference by someone from NBC.
Wow.
My job was done. Of course, it was all written up in the paper the next day about this confrontation. They quoted Howard. They quoted me. And another one after that.
Yeah.
Howard says, this is why I have to carry a gun. And da-da-da. You know, he makes it, rationalizes everything and blames me and whatever. He does the usual dance that these types of bullies do, you know. But it was written about for days and days. That was the end of my relationship with Howard Stern.
Yeah.
And I said to him when we met in an elevator at his agent's office, you know, a couple of months later. I said, Howard, what are you so mad about? I was just doing radio. It's just radio, Howard. Mm-hmm. You should know better than anybody. I was just doing a job. Right. I was just doing radio, just like you do it. Who do you think I learned it from? I learned it from the best. I learned it from you. But I'm just as good as you at doing it, and you're the target. Nothing personal.
Yeah.
I don't know why you're taking it so personally. I'm just doing radio, and I'm as good as you are at it. That was the host of, that's why Radio Free New York lasted 9 months like it did.
Mm-hmm.
Before it finally, the numbers, the finances, we weren't being paid fast enough.
Right,
by our
right.
creditors.
Yeah.
And I was saying, you have to pay faster, because I have to pay this every month. I can't
right.
wait 60 to 90 to 120 days to collect. You have to pay me right away so I can pay my rent. You
yeah.
know, I don't have an,
right.
my lease
payments.
Right,
it's in one hand out the other, right?
Yeah.
Like you need it. You need it, yeah.
But there was this four-month lag in mm-hmm. accounts receivable. Well, one day, the day finally came, we were really successful. The show itself was great. Radio Free New York embarrassed corporate radio mm-hmm. in every station, repositioned Howard into the bully that he is. We said, you know, he doesn't really care about you. He's making billions and billions of dollars off you. You know, he's not good for radio. He's good for himself.
Mm-hmm.
We repositioned Howard into the negative force on the radio. We were the positive force.
Mm-hmm.
We took a huge bite out of him until the day that Mel Karmazin finally told Howard in a memo, don't talk about Radio Free New York ever. Don't mention them
right.
on the air. Don't mention them ever again. Clam up. Just take it and don't give it to them
mm-hmm.
because you're promoting. He got it. Mel Karmazin's a smart
right.
guy. That's why he bought CBS and became the richest broadcast executive
yeah.
in the country
right.
very quickly. I'm trying to wrap this up
yeah.
so your show ends.
Yeah.
So we got to the end of 9 months. Okay, we get to the end now.
Yeah.
And I finally said to my staff and crew, we had some interns and people who just knocked at the door
mm-hmm.
and wanted, we had a bunch of characters
yeah.
on the air. I used everyone as a character.
Yeah.
But I was mentally and physically exhausted.
Oh, I can't even imagine, right.
And I was broke, too. You know,
yeah.
I'd spent all my own personal money. I had the two kids growing up. And I said to my guys, listen, guys, I've given everything I have.
Yeah.
And I don't have anything left. And I said, you know, that's it. We can't pay the rent. The format was, can they pay the rent? It was, you know, this landlord-tenant thing was written about in the papers. Mm. Will Radio Free New York, will they break their lease? Will they be back tomorrow? The music is great. The show is great. But are they off the air for good? And then we'd come back on a Monday and go, we made it. We're back. And people would go, like, oh, thank God, they're here for another day. You know, but it finally got to the day where
yeah.
we're done.
Right.
We won't be back on Monday. This is our last day.
I mean, that's almost like living the existence of a drug addict or something. Like, get me through the next day. And eventually, you're going to have some day where it's like, all
that's
right,
how dramatic
yeah.
and intense
right.
it was.
Right.
Exactly.
Right.
You know, it's a good comparison.
Mm-hmm.
We went off when I couldn't do it anymore. It took me 6 months physically to recover
yeah.
from
yeah.
the strain mentally and physically.
You tried to take you took the format to every other station, but just no one,
there was
no
a,
one bit.
We had a great show. We mm-hmm. were getting, I could get more press than Howard for any radio station in the New York City market.
Mm-hmm.
I could triple the ratings of any existing radio station
mm-hmm.
in the New York City market. In the market, I don't care what they're doing. You could be a classical station. I'll do Radio Free New York from 6
right,
to
right.
9 or 5
yeah.
to 9 or 6 to 10, whatever it is.
Yep.
And I'll deliver a multiple of three to your 10 o'clock classic station,
mm.
and that's fine, because I was doing from a Chinese guy and giving it to a Swahili guy on my station, so I could take it from a classical and give it to a classical. Fine, it's no problem. I'm just doing this podcast, and from, you know,
right.
it's a pod,
yeah,
from 6 to 10, and it's going to build a tremendous. Well, we took it to every radio station in New York, every corporate radio station, and said to them, "Don't take it personally that we were attacking you and your formats." And how boring you are. That's how you get an audience.
Yeah, yeah.
And we're getting you in. We'll do it on your station and triple your run. Every single one rejected us.
Yeah.
And that was the one thing in the business plan that I didn't anticipate.
Oh.
I anticipated transplanting this
yep.
show to a regular radio station and making big money for everyone, right, including me, my partner, and everybody. That was making it. That right. was the last page yeah. of the business plan. But we got rejected. And when I saw Buff a month ago, he runs WKNY in Kingston, New York, mm-hmm. with his partner Peter Buffett, Warren Buffett's son, Peter Buffett.
Oh, wow, okay.
They are transforming WKNY into the most...
What, is this guy Buff, is like he related to Buff and he changed
no.
his name or something?
No, no. Buff and Buffett.
Okay, wow.
My guy's Buff. My guy's Buff.
No kidding.
Yeah.
That's wow.
That ET
That's
makes,
a podcast.
That ET makes a big difference in the bank account, though.
Yeah.
That ET, having the ET.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's where Buff is now, WKNY Kingston. And these guys are doing an amazing thing with WKNY. You should check it out. It's really worth mm-hmm. it's worth checking out what they're doing. So I saw him a month ago, and I said, Buff, the only thing I don't understand, you know, we went through this together. We talk about it yeah. all the time. It was yeah. him and me.
Yeah.
He knows what I went through. I know what he went through.
Yeah.
And I say, the only thing I didn't anticipate is, why didn't someone say yes when we took it around and offered it to all the radio stations in the city, even the failing ones, the bottom one in the, what did he have to lose?
Right.
And they all said no. And I said, I don't know why. Do you know why? And he said, it's because... we were blacklisted for embarrassing them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we embarrassed them. Like Howard.
Right.
You know, why are you taking it personally? It's not personal. I'm a broadcaster. I'm an audience builder. I'm a revenue maker.
Mm-hmm.
That's what all I'm doing. It's a format.
Right.
You know, but no, they all
That's
took
the one
it
thing
personally.
You can't do. You can do anything to make money, but you can't personally humiliate the people in charge. Or they'll squash you out of principle, out of spite.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why not?
Right.
Why not? You want to make $200 a minute for an ad, or do you want to make $800 right. a minute for an ad?
Yeah.
I'll get you $800. Just let me do my thing.
Mm-hmm.
And let me play this incredible music while we're doing it. So we went off the air on July 23rd, the date you quoted.
Yeah.
And that was the end of Radio for New York. But it was the beginning of my career
mm-hmm.
for me.
Right.
You know, I was, could I say how old I was? Yeah.
All right. I'm so fascinated by how old you are because you look so much younger than whatever you're going to say right now.
Well, yeah. I was married and I had two,
yeah.
you know, kids,
right.
four and one. So I was an adult.
Yeah.
I already had a, 1993. My career was already 20 years old,
mm-hmm.
you know, 20 in broadcasting.
Yeah.
And it was at a point where it's like, what happens next? What happened next was I went back and did sports and news again and I, you know, did whatever I had to do to
yeah.
pay the bills for a while
yeah, yeah.
on all these radio stations.
Yeah.
And then.
Was that brutal for you, like going back into the machine?
Kind going of back
hard,
and doing
right?
sports
yeah.
casting?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Had to do sports casting again. Yeah, I did it. But I was doing commercials and doing a lot of voiceovers and a lot of promos and cartoon voice. And then I got the audition for the People's Court
mm-hmm.
in 1997.
Yeah.
Now, I had done a lot of auditions in my career, and I had done some TV, hosted game shows, been back and forth to Hollywood. And, you know, I was familiar with TV. But I was not going to win that audition at the People's Court. In my Radio for New York, Kurt Chaplin
right.
would have lost that audition.
Yep.
But after Radio for New York, after what I went through, walking on fire, you know,
mm-hmm.
for miles,
yeah.
on fire, through fire,
yeah,
and coming out the other end and surviving it,
mm-hmm.
you know, what you're afraid of, fear of failure is like running from the boogeyman, but you know, like you don't want to be caught by the boogeyman because if you fear of failure, you're running and running. You're running from you don't know what, the
yeah.
unknown. You don't want to be caught because if you are caught, like, oh my God, I don't want to find out what's going to happen because it's probably annihilation and homelessness and I'm going to lose everything. And so I just have to keep going. And I'm motivated by fear of failure. But when you get to the point where at the end of Radio Free New York, where you don't have any money, you've done everything you can, and the show's going off the air, and you have the two kids, and you don't know what you're going to do next, you turn and say, all right, this is it. It's time for me to face fail. Let me turn around and see what the boogeyman is,
mm-hmm.
and let's do this, mano a mano, and either I'm going to be, if I'm annihilated by this, so be it, because I'm done running
mm-hmm.
from failure. Let's do this. You and me. Me and failure, right?
Yeah.
Me and the boogeyman, right? I turned around and said, can I curse now, right now? Fuck you. Here we go. Who are you? Let's do this. Mano a mano. Put up your dukes. And you know what happened? The boogeyman shrank and shriveled away, and just there was no boogeyman. The boogeyman was a figment of your psychological fear and imagination. And once that happened, and after that confrontation, once I was the one left standing, looking in the mirror going like, ah! I am now the fearless warrior. I'm the invincible one. I'm the one you have to fear. I don't fear you anymore. And that goes for everybody.
Yeah.
I'm the invincible warrior now. I'm not afraid of failure anymore. Because I know I... So, as the fearless warrior, I went into that audition in 1997 for the People's Court. Mm. Bang! Got the gig and got the greatest gig of my life. And I did TV for 20 years after that. And I'm still the announcer on that show. And it was the greatest gig to cap off
right.
an amazing career.
Can you believe I met this madman over hand-painted baseballs at a coffee shop on the Upper East Side? This is what I love about New York. People like this are everywhere. This
be
is
fearless.
Like this is be fearless. That's how you wrote that on the cover of the CD, the documentary. Kurt, we'll have to do another session sometime soon. This was incredible. As you can see, endless stories with the guy. Check out his hand-painted baseballs too, because they really are like these are going to be in a museum someday.
That's Kurt Chaplin's
painted baseballs
on Instagram,
Facebook, and Instagram. Yeah. Perfect. All right, Kurt, I love you, man. Thanks. All right, thanks for listening, everybody. This episode was recorded, edited, and mixed by Matt Onimus. Our executive producers are me, Matt, and Ahmad Asghar. Our vice president of news is Byron Harmon, and our vice president and general manager is Lou Leone. Binge Talking is part of the Fox 5 Podcast Network. I'm Steve Lacy, and if you have any questions or comments, feel free to hit me up on Twitter, at Stephen Lacy with a V, or on Instagram, Steve Lacy, STEVELACY. In the meantime, stay tuned for our next episode.